Hi, this is Dana Gould, and you're listening to New Dissident Radio, where we've finally gotten the video out of audio video.
Hello, and welcome to Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my producer, Heather Henderson.
Hello!
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the interwebs, and from that night you tell your friends a fictional version of. You can find links to our guests' website, join our Twitter and Facebook, and find our email addresses at ardentatheist.com. If you'd like to take part in the live chat that will be moderated by Heather during the show, go to the Facebook page for Ardent Atheist, like our page, join in. We might take some of your questions, use some of your statements in the live broadcast, so join Heather there now. Our guests in the studio today are Bob Odenkirk, Jimmy Dore, and Laura from Fact vs. Religion on YouTube. You know these folks from showbiz. And by the way, Jimmy Dore's running a little bit late, guys. Sorry for that. Anyway, thank you so much for being here. Laura, thank you.
No problem. It's
Bob,
a pleasure.
Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
I know you're a busy guy. We're going to wait for Jimmy to get up here before we go through the rules of the show, but I am going to introduce Laura to the listeners right now. If you have not been on YouTube and found Fact versus Religion, go there now, find it, and watch her videos. They're fucking incredible. And I fell in love with her when I came across a video. You know, I'm not into the pot. I'm not a big drug guy or any of that, but I came across a video of Laura telling a story about having smoked a page from the Bible, rolling up a spliff. Is that what the kids call it these days, Bob? Do you know?
I have absolutely, you know what? It's just a joint to me.
It's a joint?
In Jamaica, they still call it a spliff.
My mom calls it grass still. I don't know if you
pot, grass.
Pot, grass, marijuana.
Pip, pip.
Ganj. Pip, pip?
Mm-hmm.
I like that one.
Pip, pip.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So she smoked
petunias. Petunias.
Petunias.
So, you decided to...
Schnacker.
Schnacker. I think you're making shit up now.
Wacky.
Kazam.
I'm
wizardly.
Pretty sure.
There's every name for it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Go to a medical dispensary here. They have, you know, 100 yeah. different varieties.
I found some fantastic lollipops at HempCon, actually. Just one of those little tiny lollipops that got me absolutely fucking stoned.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Just a lollipop?
Lollipop.
I think I'm a little opposed to that. I think we shouldn't be packaging drugs in something that makes kids feel better about a shot.
Yeah. One of my friends is heading back to France, and she wanted to take some popsicles back, and I said, don't let the kids get them, you know? Because they might feel a bit weird for a while.
Yeah, we shouldn't be putting drugs in a shape that is appealing to children.
Although nobody's ever died from a marijuana overdose.
Is this true?
Yeah, people can die from coffee. People can die from drinking too much coffee or maybe consuming too much coffee, although I don't know how much.
You might think he's dead, but he ain't dead.
But you you can't actually die from marijuana overdose, or at least nobody has.
Right. What other drugs have not killed us yet? I don't know that that's a good argument for pot. Anyway, I was really amazed when so many, I don't know, was it liberals for the most part that were attacking you?
No, they were actually...
Who was after you for what you did?
They were the pussy, and I mean moderate atheists. They were the more moderate PC atheists. You have, I don't know, the two that I've come across are the shouty atheists, or the ranty atheists and the pussy atheists, although more better name for them would be the PC atheists and the...
And what were they pissed about? What bothered them about what you did?
Well, because they, in their heads, saw me burning a page from a book and immediately leapt to the conclusion of book burning.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? There's a lot of leftover adoration and respect given to the Bible, especially from people who used to be Christian and are no longer Christian. The same thing happened when I stole a Eucharist from a Catholic church.
Yeah.
The people who were finding that offensive, who were a lot of them were atheists, which would surprise the shit out of me. But a lot of the people who did complain about it were ex-Catholics.
When I made an app called Islam Muhammad, excuse me, when I made this app for the iPhone, it was up for a couple weeks, and then suddenly they just pulled it down and said, "Go fuck yourself. We know what you're up to." It was an app that had.
What were you up to?
It was. I was ridiculing exactly what you were doing.
Oh,
I think.
Okay. I thought it was something sinister.
Islam. Yeah. Well, it was pictures of Muhammad interlaced with pages from the Quran. In other words, verses from the Quran.
Okay.
Particularly violent and horrific ones, and so. People were. I was stunned by the atheist community that got on my ass over that. I was shocked by how many people felt like and were really upset with me. Matt Cornell, a friend of mine, used to work with Extreme Elvis, and he read me the fucking Riot Act. And
what?
Yeah.
What is it about these people? Like, we can't make any waves. We're not allowed.
Well, what they're saying is that I'm being intolerant of the religion. And what I
said to that was,
you are correct. I'm being intolerant.
You're being intolerant of the religion. That's the whole fucking point.
Right. Right. Well,
actually, no. The first point I really do think is to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, I think an important point is to be ridiculing. Because the thing is, if the first point is ridiculed, then it's like you're kind of going out of your way to do this. And I don't want to. I don't want it to be like – I'm not an angry person, but I do think it's something that needs to address. But let's address it in a fun way. Let's have fun while we're doing this.
All right. Well, I'm going to pull Bob into this conversation. And there was a guy, Terry Jones, I think his name is. Not
Florida?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
The Florida preacher.
He burned the Quran.
Yeah.
I watched a video. That video was great.
Did you find the video of him burning it?
No, I saw a video.
Uh-huh.
And he's standing, it looks like he's in a courtroom, and he's standing.
Holding, they held court right there. I'm just laughing. Right there.
I mean, right?
Talk about retarded monkeys. Are you kidding me? You're going to hold a book. You're going to hold court. They found the book guilty of, I don't know what they found the book guilty of. It's a fucking book.
Just misdemeanors.
They gave him tickets.
It had so many parking fines. At a certain point.
Can you be burned for misdemeanors?
You have to get like 2,000
okay.
parking
tickets. I didn't know the
2,000 or more.
I'm not far from being burned.
But the thing that killed me in the video was, you know, he's standing there and he's like puts the book down on a little stove. Then takes the one of those long lighter things oven or whatever. And he goes.
Well, I heard he had.
And then it's just pictures. All you see is flashes, flash. So you don't see the cameraman. Yeah. But you just see like. And I'm thinking we're idiots.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Fuck is,
Bob, what do you
so
think
stupid.
Of a guy burning the Quran, first of all? And then layer two of
I
people
think,
killing other people
I think
over
if
that.
If you burn the Quran, now what's for dinner? Because you just burned it. And get out the mac and cheese. Guys, I got bad news.
Marshmallows.
So what we need is recipes. We need recipes for the Quran.
I'm saying you should poach.
Or marshmallows. Marshmallows and sticks?
A holy book should be poached or they're no good.
Right.
or recycled.
What do I think? I think a book is a book. I mean, it's just, look, I'm sorry. I'm nowhere near as
ardent
as you guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in fact, I don't even consider myself an atheist at all.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Kill him.
No, in fact, I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I told a joke. I know, because I told a joke in stand-up. It was one of the first jokes I wrote. When I was probably 23. When
you
I was
poor
doing
guy, you
stand-up.
Didn't know what you were getting into.
Yeah, and I said, I was raised Catholic, which means I'm an atheist now. Which is a joke that gets laughs.
It's a funny joke.
Because people who were raised Catholic know what it's like to feel like I can't wait to get past this. Or anything, I suppose. Raised Jewish, or I have friends, David Cross, who is an atheist, who raised Jewish and despises religion.
Yeah.
And couldn't wait to get away from it and makes fun of it. And, so it got a laugh. But I was joking.
Right.
I mean, it's weird because I am not a huge fan of organized religion. On the other hand, I have...
Let me hold you to the fire for a minute.
Yeah.
Tell me what you do believe in terms of supernatural and God, afterlife.
I mean, really,
share
it all comes down to a feeling of humility.
Okay.
A feeling of an inability to loudly, confidently reject sort of the core of spiritual belief.
Okay.
I just can't do it.
Okay.
I feel I feel like I could have maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah. You have kids now.
I have kids.
That factors in for you, I'm presuming. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think it does. Sure. You know, my kids go to a religious school.
Jewish?
And yeah, mm-hmm. Reform.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know a Reform rabbi wrote a treatise a year and a half ago saying you don't have to believe in God to be a Reformed Jew?
Actually,
just
I
as
right,
long as
yeah,
you believe in
that.
Mitzvah,
I
yeah.
thought you weren't even allowed
deeds.
To think about God if you're Jewish.
Well,
strictly speaking,
I don't know about that. No.
What do you mean,
Laura? I suppose
Laura?
There are some maybe conservatives who or some. I don't know. I there may be some Orthodox sects that say you can't even think about it.
Well, I know that there are certain rules about writing it. You can't write the
yeah.
The
no,
word,
the,
you know?
A lot of observant Jews would not write. The word God.
Is it,
they would write G-D.
What's that about?
Very
what's
OCD?
That about? Hold on. What's that about? This is the first I've heard of this, actually, which I'm embarrassed
yeah,
to admit.
Yeah, I have some friends in comedy who wouldn't do that.
Is this kind of like not showing, not drawing a picture of Muhammad conceptually?
It's not using an image or a representation of the Almighty in a human way.
That's
you know,
crazy.
It's the religious equivalent of not mentioning the Scottish play to an actor.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I don't think
look,
you go to
you
hell
know,
for
look,
doing
look,
that.
Look, it's...
But the Jews have no hell, right?
I don't know, actually.
I mean, besides... besides Germany.
First of all, it's hard to say anything across the board. And this is one of the reasons I really fell out with religion,
mm-hmm.
is because... You know, if you're a Catholic, there are, you know, Jesuits who are rejected by the Pope. So
right,
it's
right.
like, well, what, you don't even agree with each other. You hate each other sometimes.
Right.
You know, there's a great book written by it's correspondence between an Orthodox rabbi and a Reform rabbi.
Yeah.
It's called One People, Two Worlds, I believe.
Okay.
I've got a copy of it. It's really great to read, and it's you know, it devolves into craziness.
Yeah.
I mean, they, at some point, I believe it's the Orthodox rabbi says something like, I would rather you just had a hobby
right.
than call yourself a Jew and right. claim to follow the religion. I'd rather you just like Kiss.
None of them.
You know, which is just insane.
Right.
So you don't want anyone to share a part of what you believe because that hurts your feelings so much. It feels like such a rejection.
Well, that's
you know,
the problem
look,
with religion,
religion
in general.
Is
it's absolutely
look,
none.
I can't deny it. I will make fun of it. You saw the piece I wrote for Vice magazine this month.
That was very funny,
will,
by the way.
Thank you. I will make fun of it.
I actually
but
knew that you were going to interview God.
I am
God.
A comedian,
yeah,
and I do comedy, and I make fun of hypocrisies.
Yeah.
But do I think I can roundly reject religion in a really strong, strident way? I just can't.
Yeah.
I have a part of me that is...
do you think you're going to see Mom and Dad in heaven?
You know what? I don't. And I don't think. See, this is one of my problems with religion.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
How can you talk about God? I mean, if anything's God has been made in an image by man.
Right.
Right.
I mean, please.
Thank you.
But see. I,
you know, you sound
I'd,
like an
I'd
atheist
be more, apt,
more and more.
I know,
every second.
But I'd be more apt to say I can't. In my humility as a person, I can't. I can't claim to know who God is and what he is. And
right.
I also can't claim to that there isn't anything or any or that we shouldn't have a humility in the face of something maybe greater than us.
Did you think the things that you're talking about?
You know, I also think this. I think that you trust your instincts. And in a lot of ways, spirituality is an instinct. It is. It's a natural thing to... left alone to think there's something greater than me. It's a natural thing, I think, to when you're near death go, I can't end, right? I don't just end.
Right.
There's some part of me that says I don't just end.
Right.
I agree, but I
and
don't
so,
think...
And so, look, I'm not going to put a name on it myself, right? And I'm not going to tell you what it, how you're supposed to behave
right.
because of it.
Right.
And what you're supposed to eat on a certain day.
Right.
But... I'm not going to say I know for a fact there's nothing, and I'm sure of that in my heart, and you're all fools for following or trying to ascertain what that instinct is and what it means to you, and you know, so it's very, it's a little, it's hard for me personally. I'm speaking honestly here. Yeah. I obviously be happy to joke around about every religious book and everything, but I feel like there's just as much a lack of humility in an ardent atheist as there is in an ardent Catholic.
Can I, for the sake of argument, I would find it very interesting if we could substitute every time you said the word God for the leprechaun, because I think it would be harder for people to take that. I mean, and I see what you're saying, and it's a good argument that you're putting
forward.
Okay,
well, let's talk about leprechauns for a minute. I'll talk about leprechauns. People believe in Ireland for many centuries, a lot of people believe in the wee people, right?
Yeah.
The little forts, what are they called? Ring forts or what are they? Fairy circles?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. For all intents and purposes.
Probably
yes.
Made by farmers to charm their children or something. Or perhaps made by druids to have
candy.
Ceremonies. And then
okay, enough of that. Listen.
300
listen.
Years
Stop
later,
it.
Everybody forgot that it was made by this caveman, and then they thought it just sprang up out of nowhere.
Well, that listen, that
okay,
exercise
but
is a perfect example.
Hold on a second. Hold on.
He's not done
My
yet.
Point is what I said earlier. I think it's a natural instinct, even for an intellectual person, to feel that there is more to this world and maybe more to people and their spirits than what is right in front of you and what you can touch and break and test.
And
so fairies came out of that.
I agree with
and
you.
And I don't think you're wrong that instinct maybe led people to devise fairies. But you don't prove much by making that wisecrack.
Okay.
I mean, so
I agree with you. I agree with everything you said. But you see, the thing that I find contemptible about necessarily referring to something like that as just spirituality is because that's sort of, to a greater or lesser extent, where it ends. And what I find so irritating about most people is that, in a sense, they're prepared, I know what that is. It's a spiritual experience. And they can just dismiss it as such, whereas it's a deeply emotional thing for anybody who's had one of these, quote-unquote, religious experiences. And I don't know why people aren't keen to examine that in great detail as much as
Wait a second. What are you saying? I don't understand what you're saying. You got to restate that.
Let me jump in. Atheists of my ilk, the kind that you're talking about, the kind that you don't understand, okay?
Well, no, yeah, okay.
You said, you know,
I wouldn't say I don't understand. I'd say I can't go there.
Okay, well,
I just can't.
Right. I'll
can't honestly go there.
I wouldn't want you to.
I think I can make fun of all kinds of traditions, both religious and non-religious. I can make fun of all kinds of things that are held sacred, objects, because I don't believe objects are sacred.
In your satire, you do that all the time.
Yeah, and I do. I do it, and I will do it, and that's fine. But I don't just... I don't consider myself an atheist.
No, I know.
I can't. And while I can make fun of it, I feel that in a lot of ways, comedy is like more subjective even than music to me. I mean, there's people who say I hate jazz. I'm one of them.
Me too.
But I've started to understand.
Jimmy
jazz
Dore's in the house.
More.
What do you think of jazz, Jimmy?
I love jazz. It's my favorite.
You're
music.
An idiot. You believe in fairies,
Welcome
too,
to
right?
the show, Jimmy.
I do believe in fairies.
We're going to beat him up after the broadcast.
You see, ardent
all right, but
atheists,
I think atheists that
do what I do, where I really speak loudly, out loud, about religion, is because I consider religion in general, and truly across the board, to be harmful to society.
I hear you.
That's why I do it. That's what motivates me.
You know,
I'm going to finish the thought. Yeah. I love everything you said about the spirituality. I love everything that you're talking about. We don't need to believe in a magical guy in the sky or some sort of energy that connects us all, which is just bullshit fucking hippie woo. You don't need to believe any of those things to have what you're talking about.
I got to say, you're making fun of, and rightfully so, the broadest, simplest aspects and traditions of religion. And so my problem is that I can do that too. Some of that I think is easy. That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Oh, it's incredibly easy.
I like laughing at farts and all kinds of things.
Right. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It's just if, you know, if you're talking seriously, and I felt like I'd talk seriously, because people do kind of take this stuff seriously.
Right.
I don't, and I know you're speaking honestly. I know that you feel the way you do, but I just don't, I even though I joke about it all, I just don't, I can't jump in feet first in the, you know.
In the fray.
In the fray. And at the same time, I agree, you know, a lot of horrors and pain and trauma come from these beliefs.
An asshole burns a Quran and then 12 people are dead on the other side of the fucking world.
That's insane.
Right. That's nuts.
And I blame the people who killed those people.
Right, right.
I don't blame.
Jump in. I interrupted you earlier.
The goofball who lit a book that he doesn't believe in because he believes in another book.
Right,
which
is,
if you burned his book, he'd go shithouse.
Right. Give me 1 second before I pull Jimmy back in. I want to do a station ID.
Please don't burn on the road, though. Catch her in the rye.
You're listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. Today's episode sponsored in part by the urgent need to get religious dogma out of our laws. We're talking to Bob Odenkirk.
Let's talk about some books we don't want burned.
Jimmy
Dore. I'd like to recommend some books while
and
we're
Laura running. Is in the studio. I have a new product, Bob. I'll tell you right now. I've created and am selling a brand new product. It's called the Extremist Shield 4000.
Uh-huh.
It appears to be a copy of Mein Kampf, but when you open it, it's hollowed out, so you can put a copy of the Quran inside it.
Or any book you want, really.
And you can safely burn any book that you want in a copy of Mein Kampf, and it won't offend anybody, you know? So if you want to burn a copy of anything, a Quran, a Bible, anything, then all you have to do is order the Extremist Shield 4000. Call now. 352-371-2487. Operator standing by. That's 352-371-2487. Jimmy.
Oh, sure. It sounds like you guys got it covered. I don't really know why.
Welcome to the show. What happened out there?
Parking is the son of a gun out here.
Yeah, we live in L.A., don't we?
I got here at 7:01, but then it took me the rest of that time to find a parking place.
Well, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having
Laura
me.
Laura is on your right here.
Hello, Laura. Hello.
You know Bob. Have you met Bob before?
We know each other.
Go way back?
Oh, no, we don't go way back. Cool. We've
seen each other a lot at different comedy shows.
You are indeed an atheist, I heard.
Yes, you know, I'm come down more on your side. I find that, people will be, oh, he's religious. So you don't say that. Like, I have a lot of religious people in my family. And I remember just last year I was going for 4th of July. We were having a family reunion. And my niece and her husband are they're born agains. And so my dad was like, be careful what you say. They're really sensitive.
Oh, they're such fun.
They're really sensitive about their religion. And I said, hey, why don't you, no one would ever think to tell them, hey, Jimmy's coming. You know, he's an atheist. Watch that, all that Jesus shit.
Right.
No one would ever say it the other
That's
way.
That's exactly
why
right.
Why does it always go that way? Yeah. That's the thing that bothers me about it.
Well, let me jump in and ask you, are you offended when people do it?
When people
talk about Jesus and the God on the money,
no,
are you
no.
offended? That's the difference, you know?
I don't get I get offended at God on the money, but I don't get offended when people talk about you. I enjoy talking with religious people about religion.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I enjoy conversation. I enjoy talking about all things controversial.
Yeah.
I like talking about the things you're not supposed to talk to, politics and talk about politics and religion.
Fist-fucking?
Fist-fucking.
Okay.
Actually, you know what? I think there are people, some religious people, who will keep their religiosity down a bit if they know there's an atheist around, and I know that probably they feel comfortable doing that because they wish that maybe
they're using the golden rule and they're reversing
it.
Right.
They are, but the thing is, I wish they didn't feel like they had to tiptoe. Like if I was going to a household where religious people were, I wish they'd feel comfortable enough to just act the way they would normally act.
Right.
I beg atheists, agnostics, and non-believers to never use the word offended. I really do.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah,
what you're doing is you're applying the approach of the believer to it almost makes us seem religious. And we're not religious. We're a-religious. We don't have
religion. It's the absence of belief. It's not another belief, which some people try to make it. Can I just say, I find it funny, like, as a stand-up comedian, I went to Catholic school for 12 years, so I have that has to get out of me, right?
Right,
so that's
right.
In my comedy all over the place. And I like to make fun of going to Catholic school. And so oftentimes people get mad at me, and I'll never forget the last time it happened. I was in Cleveland. This lady stood up in the front row, pointed at me, and then yelled at the top of her lungs, "You're going to hell," and walked out. And I was like, if you really felt that way, wouldn't you be nicer to me now?
Right.
Wouldn't you be like, you're going to hell? Wouldn't you try to instead? No, it's more of that. There's a part of her, I think, when people who do that They suspect they're wrong, and I'm not going to hell. And they want to be able to have the same doubts I can profess publicly, but they're afraid, and so they have to shut me up. I mean, because if they really did, it's like if somebody said, I'm going to go beat up Mike Tyson, you wouldn't be like, you're going to get your ass. You'd be like, dude, you better be careful. You know what I mean? You would be the other way. So that's what, or if you knew somebody was going to walk into a manhole cover, there's not a cover on. Hey, you're going to walk. You wouldn't be like, yeah. So I think I've explained it enough times.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a conversation with a woman who was very religious, and when I told her I was an atheist, I got this, oh, kind of thing, a very nervous laugh, and like, oh, okay. You know, she was really timid and scared to talk to me about it, and I'm like, I'm not going to bite
you. You should have just stared at her. You should have just stared at her long and hard and said, I had my horns removed.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem with religion also, is that it totally demonizes anyone who's not buying into it. And that's generally not all, I guess, not all belief systems, but most.
We're talking about extremists. And I think that that's not the way it is for most people. But I think that at least I found in my socializing with people, I find it really hard to relate to that part of their mind, which sees a God in all things. It's like we're not seeing the same world. So I don't really know how to relate to them on a personal level sometimes.
Right. Well, I think that people who speak, you know, I think what Bob was talking about earlier, it's that, you know, that we might not believe in that exact kind of invisible man in the sky thing, but, you know, there is mystery in the universe that we don't understand.
Right.
And so...
even if it's almost... merely scientific.
Right.
There's a humility that I find lacking in super religious people who know exactly how the universe is wired and who you are and what's going to happen to your soul and where heaven is. That's above the clouds. I saw Pat Robertson talking about like a certain level of heaven that was just above the clouds.
Right. Never ends.
What?
Right.
Is it like a strata?
He's never ever flown to New Zealand or Australia.
And he knew where the fire exits were.
All you have to do is go to the Hubble telescope website.
Right, right.
Take a look at some of those photos of all of the sky above the clouds and ask yourself, where does God come in here? Where
but you
there's
know,
so many
you know
other
I mean?
Galaxies
I
up
mean,
there.
I mean, there's that certainty is, I think, reflected in a certain in declaring atheism the way you guys declare it, which is that's how I feel, but that might be because of my life experiences and the way I feel like there's some thing or some power that I have to be that I feel is real and that I have to be humble.
But it's you. It's you. Fuck humble.
Well,
it's
look,
in
man,
you.
Look, give me some credit for thinking about it.
I do.
Maybe.
You're,
and maybe thinking maybe
you're
it's
on,
me.
You're on
being
my
pretty
top
sure
ten
that
list
it's
of,
not.
You're on my top 10 list of people I enjoy talking to, who I appreciate, and who I genuinely, just not comedically, but personally revere. I think
yeah,
you really.
And you know, I got
the
be
way
honest.
You are with your kids, fucking awesome, and the way you are with your family, you're just. You're so above most of the people I know. So I'm not picking on you. I'm not at all.
Can I say though?
I just think it's hard. This is a hard thing for me to talk about with the even just the characterizing it as with the confidence and certainty that you guys know about what you believe in this area. So you know, I mean, I coming on this show, this has been the hardest thing for me.
Really,
Marie,
really,
is. When I say that, I mean, the hardest thing about coming on this show has been I'm just going to really sound like I don't know what I'm talking about, and that's a little bit what I'm trying to say.
Well, let me clear something up
I'm
for you
doing,
right now.
But my feelings are things that I've examined
for
many, many times,
right.
Many ways, from many angles. I mean, Reformed Judaism is very different from the Catholicism, the Roman Catholicism that I grew up in.
Right.
And I also went to Catholic school only until fifth grade, though. And so that's like a completely different approach to religion that also has some things in common that are crazy, but also is different in a way that, you know, rabbis are not priests, they're teachers, and their job is to just kind of they're way more equals than a priest is not an equal. You know, a priest is like all-star?
I don't know. I kind of think of him more like a pimp.
A priest?
Yeah. I mean, come
God's
on.
Pimp?
I mean, he's so decked out, you know? I mean,
it's insane.
They love those costumes. I just think it's really... I want to get back
to the point of there's nothing at all to be... We're comics hanging out, talking what we think, which is kind of bullshit.
Yeah, but you're talking about a really a personal thing that is... If you be honest, I think difficult to for some people to talk about for sure. For me,
I want to know why.
Then, by the way, then thanks for coming on.
Yes, definitely.
I didn't realize it was that big a deal to you.
And it's encouraging.
I'm actually happy to because of the whole atheist thing. When I saw a few years ago that I was listed as an atheist,
I was
like, "Come on, you didn't ask me. Nobody asked me.
That's fucking creepy, actually, a joke,
and now it's printed everywhere that I'm an atheist. Yeah. It was a joke." I mean, the whole...
Hey, man, if you went through my act, I'm probably a pedophile and a rapist.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm a rapist. Yeah, I raped a deaf girl in my act. So
right, so there you go.
Oh, and a girl who stutters. Where's the...
You could be prosecuted for that.
Hey, can I ask...
I think there's a statute of limitations. Okay. This joke was told many years ago.
I just want to ask a quick question, because you both are comics. I'd like to ask each of you, is there anything that you think shouldn't be joked about?
You know what? I don't think that you can't. I think you can joke about anything as long as the people you're joking. This is one of the problems with the internet.
What about Japan?
But see, I wouldn't do that. Or if I did, I would think about it a lot. What it was saying and why and who I was saying it to. And that's one of the problems with the internet is you can't hold your audience and just talk to your audience. It gets everywhere.
Right.
Everybody sees it. You know, people who weren't invited into the room are there.
Right. And they can take and do whatever they want with
and
it.
And they can misread it in any way they want.
Right.
And they're free to do that. Absolutely.
I know, but that's a new phenomenon. I mean, there was no internet, before there was an internet, that didn't happen. It didn't happen unless you wrote a book. And if you wrote a book, well, you had all this context around it. You know what I mean? I don't know. We all have different levels of
Gilbert
has no monitor.
There's no filter.
He has no filter.
Right.
And I was the other aspect of this, and you know this, is being around comics. A lot of people have an act that isn't an act.
Right.
They're screwed up, crazy motherfuckers. And when they're on stage, it's so funny because they're playing this crazy person with this, crude point of view or crazy point of view or hyper neurotic point of view. And they don't realize, the audience, that when those people walk off stage, the only difference is there's no mic. That's the only difference.
Right.
And
I was on my Facebook.
To give the actor, the performer, some credit, they realize that people are entertained by their craziness.
Right.
But their craziness is no different. It's actually sometimes not. Oftentimes it's enlarged, right?
Right.
But that's what a lot of us do is we take our point
just
of view
blow it up,
and we just blow it up.
Bigger, yeah.
Right. But some people, a few, aren't really changing anything.
Yeah.
And that's just who they are. And so, anyway.
Funny-wise, if it works, it works. But personality-wise, you probably wouldn't want to spend a long car trip with them.
Well, and for me, by the way, the answer is there's nothing that you can't joke about. And I think it's important literally to joke about virtually everything. I mean everything,
Right.
Everything. And in the moment, too, it's really, really important. And I think helpful and healthy to make jokes. I was dating a girl for 5.5 years who's HIV positive, and a friend called me and said, "How you holding up?" And I said, "It's a hard breakup. It's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life." And he goes, "Tell me, if you tell me what you want to tell me." I said, "Well, I walked in. I had a flower, actually. We'd had a bad weekend. I had a flower," and she started crying. And he goes, "Well, remember, she was crying insidious, disease-filled tears," which is fucking hilarious. So now I'm in the depths of misery over a loss that I'm really wrestling with. I mean, the worst ever. And I'm smiling and laughing, and there's value in that. And it's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, but you got to give yourself I'm sorry, but everybody is not as able to compartmentalize their thoughts and their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
they just
everybody
aren't.
Have
and you got to give people some room for that. I mean, you maybe unbelievably.
There's
good
no question.
At that.
My friend knew my sensibilities, and he played. Yeah.
Right.
There's
right,
no question about
right.
that.
And a lot of people can't do that, and that's okay. Everybody doesn't.
But I think the Andy Dix of the world, and I think that the Gilbert Gottfrieds of the world should be. They're the reverse of the equation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't fucking go read his wall ever if you've right. ever been offended. And if you are offended, go fuck yourself. That's how I feel about both of those guys. Andy Dick should be allowed to be a big, drunk, retarded moron every fucking day of his life, and every one of us should help him get into a cab and back to the fucking house. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Really?
No, I mean, I don't...
You don't have to drive the cab.
Yeah. Give me a second. All right, go ahead.
Washable seats.
Well, I mean, I think, certain people... I don't think obnoxious behavior, you know, sometimes it can be entertaining. No, I don't go that way. I would disagree with you on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. As far as making fun of anything, I mean, I did Fukushima jokes on my radio show that week, you know. And
the day it happened, I'm watching CNN, and I'm just sitting there stunned. And then pops up on my wall, Doug Stanhope, fresh sushi delivered to your door. And I'm howling. I'm just howling. And so then I'm on my wall. I wrote 40 goddamn jokes in an hour, you know? And I'm sorry, that is what we do, you know?
Well, but my point was like, I didn't make fun of, hey, look, their houses got wiped out. You know, I didn't make, the joke that I made was that they were General Electric was worried because they made the, and I was like, really, Japan? The one time you buy American, it's a nuclear reactor? That's.
Oh, that's so great.
You don't get the guys. You don't get the boys over at Sony working on that. You got it. You go right over to GE.
Yeah.
If you ever buy a toaster from them. So I think to answer your question, I think it's not. Again, like most things, there's always something to make fun of in the situation or of how people are reacting to it. I made fun of how some of the newscasters were trying to downplay the nuclear thing, and which I found funny. A lot of them were over at Fox anyway. They were. And so I made fun of that. So there's things, you don't ever want to, I always think comedy should go upward, never downward. Yeah. You never want to make fun of someone.
Well, that's subjective again, isn't it?
It is subjective. It's true. But I understand what you're talking about is the morality of your comedy is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And in our, it's interesting, in our industry generally, and you may not be in this group, I won't force you into it. You tell me if you are or not. Okay. Be honest, too. As a comic...
I've experimented in college. What do you mean?
No. We'll talk about that. As a comic, don't you enjoy the more edgy, transgressive stuff? Or is that not you? That's me for sure, and
no,
most of my
that's
friends.
That's definitely who I am, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, my favorite comics were always the comics that pushed the envelope. You know, George Carlin as a kid, and then Bill Hicks as a... young man, and now a lot of different people.
Right.
Yeah, so definitely, I often tell people, now, when you go see a comedian, just remember that no one told him he has to say that. That's all he's doing tonight is 10 minutes or 20 minutes.
Right.
And that's what he chose to talk about. Of all the things that are going on in the world or in his life, those are the things he chose. And when you think about that, you're like, wow, that guy's pretty empty. Or that guy's pretty, that's how I feel about it a lot of time. Now, I like funny just for funny's sake, too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I like... But I think if you're going to stand on stage, why not make it worthwhile?
Right, right.
Right? Is that how you feel?
It is. Absolutely. It's interesting. I'm quoting someone, and I love this quote. I wish I had thought to say it before Chris Rock said it when we interviewed him for The Aristocrats. What offends you? Provenza asked. And he thought for about 15 seconds. Seemed like a long time. And then finally he goes, bad comedy offends me.
Ah, yes, that's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he stole that from me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I quote Chris Rock, and it's absolutely how I feel.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where he was where his rabbi started to do comedy. And he said, you're offended as a Jew? He said, oh, I'm offended as a comedian.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's it. That's what bothers me when it comes to comedy. Everything else? It is. It's fair game.
Yeah,
and
look,
it really gets me in the gut when
it's
harsh.
I love good comedy, and I don't like stupid comedy that I don't like, but I don't think comedy is very important. I'm sorry. I don't think anything we do is very important.
Yeah?
At all.
Okay.
Except for trying to raise our kids.
That's well, what don't about you think that to you?
And treat other people?
But don't you think? I mean,
just the importance of stuff and certain things like that. I think maybe 15 years ago I would have said the same thing,
What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Huh?
What gets you out of bed?
His
in
kids,
the morning?
His family.
So
I can answer that.
That's
for
what's important to you. That's important to you.
You know,
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I remember I was watching this documentary of Joseph Campbell being interviewed by Bill Moyers. And, you know, he's this guy who studied every religion forever. And they asked him, what do you think? And he seems like he would have the answer to this question. So they asked him, what is the meaning to life? And he said, there is no meaning to life. The only meaning in life is the meaning you give it.
Right.
And so comedy can be as meaningful as you make it.
Yeah.
Or as, so now you have other things
in
your life.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a good way to look at it. And I appreciate that. People, I certainly think for a long time that it was the most important thing to me.
But now you have
for many years.
Mr. Show molded young minds. Do you understand that? I mean, honestly, Mr. Show.
I think it was a smart show, it said a lot of things. It's not I don't think it's a simplistic show.
Right.
It made fun of a lot of things about religion and the way people behave and government and all kinds of things. But you know, Emery, we thought. When you talk about the Gilbert Gottfried or Andy Dick kind of person who jokes around, we thought about every single bit we did. We asked ourselves, who is this ridiculing and why? Now, we could be misinterpreted. Obviously, you can't guarantee that everyone's going to take it the way you made it, and that's life.
Right.
But I think we thought a lot about what we were saying, and so we did our
I wouldn't call it necessarily important, but influential is a proper word. Really, really great, well thought out, layered.
Yeah, but I think I'm sorry. I do think comedy can be important.
That's what I think.
I'm not. I do, because you know what it is. I told my daughter this. I said comedy is about honesty. Mm-hmm. That's what it's a way to be honest. It's a way for people to be honest, and share that moment and that knowledge, whatever it is. And laugh. You laugh because of oftentimes there's some nerves or some tension built up over the issue at hand.
Right.
And it dissipates that tension or burns it off real fast, and it's a good feeling, and there's a connection made.
Right.
And I think it can make like a novel or a book or a song or any piece of art can make people feel less alone.
Yeah.
Because there's somebody else who says, you know, I know what you're thinking.
Right.
I think that too.
That's how
it
I
can
feel.
Be very therapeutic in a way too, because it seems like in order for good comedy has to be really edgy. In fact, the more edgy it is, seems to be the more therapeutic and the funnier it is. Because I think that you know when a joke is said, right, it's like it falls on like this fault line. It could either go into being angering and offensive, or go into being therapeutic and a release
right.
because you realize it's not a big deal and
okay,
you can.
Okay,
get rid
but
of
let's
it.
Talk about let's talk about some comedy that we probably all hate, right?
What, Corn Again?
Let's say 2.5 Men, something
okay.
like that, right?
Okay.
So like, I can't watch that and be entertained myself.
Yeah.
But I understand that there are a lot of people out there who are struggling to pay the bills.
Right.
Keep track of their kids.
Right.
To deal with their addictions or
right.
whatever crap yeah, was but, left over from their childhood.
But what does that have to do with their bad taste in comedy?
They don't have the time and the space in their brain to think about the subject of comedy or what they're looking for in the entertainment realm and educate their taste. I mean, your tastes grow. I mean, there are a lot of kids who like Miley Cyrus now who will one day like Radiohead. You know, they have to grow up and mature. They just haven't done that yet. And some people don't mature their taste in music or comedy or whatever. I mean,
or
you
food.
Probably don't have great sensitive, sensibilities regarding college football. You know, and there's guys who could tell you every player on every team in America. And
but do you think football is cultured?
What do you mean?
Well, how do you develop a taste? Like, how do you become cultured in
football?
You have
an interest in it, and you
You know everything about it?
You learn about it. You watch it a lot, and you get more sensitive to what matters and why, and you understand
football
more.
Football is nothing more than
thoroughly.
Soap operas for men. That's all it is. It's soap operas for men.
You see, I think
it's
I
a
am
diversion.
I'm not saying it's important,
it's a
but
diversion
it is important
from
to some people.
It's a diversion from the fact that you're in a miserable relationship with three kids and a wife who hasn't put her mouth on your cock in over 4 years. That's what fucking football works. That's why it works.
Yeah. I probably used the wrong example, but I do think that...
But it's like anything, sports. You know, I played a lot of sports growing up, and you know, you talk about honesty and comedy.
I mean, tell Brody Stevens that. Get Brody Stevens in there.
Oh, he'd hit me. Tell him.
You know, sports is the same thing. I mean, you can learn a lot about life through sports. You can face yourself. You can choose to. Yeah. A lot of people do comedy and never are honest, never face themselves, always look outward.
Yeah, but those people do bad comedy.
That's not necessarily
not
true
always.
Either.
Not really, not always at all. That's true. That's absolutely true. Hold on a minute, guys. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. Today's show brought to you by Jesus's all-natural artesian holy spring water. Drink Jesus's or your bowels will be looses. We're talking to Bob Odenkirk, Jimmy Dore, and Laura. Again, thanks for coming in, you guys. Sorry, we have to do that. you have no idea how much money I get for that. That's a lot of fucking money. Anyway. Football's also communal. I mean, I don't want to be a dick, but we can
make fun of it because I don't care at all about
Do
it.
Do any
but
of us watch football,
is,
by the way?
No,
any
but the fact is, get Brody in here, and he'll tell you why it's important, and, you know, he's probably had a few people touch his cock. I don't know. I don't really want to. No, I just can't believe
that.
That
can't be possible.
You put that thought
that
in my
head. That
can't
be possible because he would be wildly more successful.
Yeah.
I don't know why he's not a fucking superstar.
You know, as a kid, he's got a deal now on HBO. When I was a kid.
Yeah, new show.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, you know, comedy to me, like growing up Catholic, so Catholic, right? And nobody thought for themselves. And I grew up in a blue-collar neighborhood. And
where? Whereabouts?
It's southwest side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Very... we had scattered site Section 8 housing in our neighborhood, so people got a chance to be racist face to face with each other, face to face, right? Face to face with them. And so it was that kind of a neighborhood. You know, the way I describe it is that, you know, people would watch reruns of All in the Family and laugh for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
So that was my neighborhood. And comedy to me, when I remember where I was standing the first time I heard George Carlin. And it just changed my life. It was like, it made it seem, because adults to me seemed all stupid, and I didn't understand why they didn't want to have more fun with their life. And then you see adults doing comedy, making fun of other adults for being stupid like that, and it just, I wasn't afraid to be a grown-up anymore.
Right.
So comedy, and Monty Python did that to me too, and
I
have a feeling that that show did it for a lot of young kids,
Python.
Too.
Absolutely.
So that's what kind of brought me, it made me, it really did give me a sense of security as a kid, comedy, like, it's okay to grow up. This isn't going to be forever. There are other grown-ups, when you grow up, that are going to think like you and think that that shit is just as stupid as you think.
When did you break away from religion through this process?
It was in eighth grade when I saw my dad kneel. I was being confirmed, and I was kind of skeptical about it at the time, and my dad was the lector at the mass, so the bishop comes to do that, right? So I didn't know. They send, there's several bishops. I didn't know. And so they send a second bishop, and then my dad knelt down in front of him and kissed his ring, which, and it, to me, of course, my dad was the biggest guy in the world.
That's
was a cop. And I go, Dad, and I, after the guy left, it ended for me right then, because it was just like everything they teach you.
How old are you at this point?
In eighth grade. Everything they teach you in school, Catholic schools, about how the Pharisees were all about. Like, to me, it was this guy showed up, he looked like a Pharisee to me, and my dad knelt down and kissed another man's ring, and it just grossed me out, and I was over. That was when I was over with religion.
Wow.
And I asked my dad about it afterwards. And he said, no, I wasn't kissing his ring. That's a sacred jewel. And they keep it. He just happens to wear it.
He happens to wear it on a ring?
That was it. That did it for me.
Dad, what if it was in a cock ring?
Yeah.
But then we also had my eighth grade year. They had a priest come in who was a pedophile, and he tried to molest us. He tried to molest me. I got away. And,
really?
Yeah, he would take us up to his summer house.
This is a first for me. I've never talked to someone who actually had
Father Hollihan was his name.
What was his approach?
You can Google it.
Honestly, I'm curious
he
about
would take
what was
us
his
up.
You can Google him.
I did. you can go. He would take us up to his, he had a summer house with a boat on a lake. And so he would take four or five, you know, eighth grade boys.
Who couldn't swim.
And he was going to teach us how to ski. But so he set up the day where you had to change clothes three or four times. So you would get there.
What?
And you'd have to, you'd have to change clothes to go in the water. But then you only went in the water for like a half hour. And then you had to change clothes again so you could clean. You had to clean to do your work before you could play again. And he was in the room every time.
We were, wow.
And then he would pick one of us out to wrestle. And he wasn't one of those guys. He wasn't like a wrestler. He wasn't like a guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was all, and we all knew it was weird, but you're a kid, so you don't know what to do exactly.
Right. Right.
It's really kind of
so
weird.
Much power.
Yes. You don't know what to do. Power. It's so weird. And you talk about it between yourselves, but you would never say it to your parents.
Right.
And then it came out a couple years later that he was, what was we call a toucher. And of course, he didn't go to. They just sent him to Phoenix. He was one of those guys.
Oh, they just transfer the guy.
Yes, and we all got a
fucking shithead.
Everybody got a letter at our house in the Paris saying that he needs our prayers more than anybody right now. You
see,
know,
they usually don't send letters.
He needs our fist in his ass. No, no,
they didn't say what he did. They just said that he needs our prayers. He's going through a tough time.
Did you talk to anybody who actually got molested?
I know the kid down the street. Well, the kid down the street from me did for sure. Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Holy.
And then the other kids
hell.
With us. I'm sure two of them did. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
One guy, he would teach you how to ski. Now, how do you teach someone how to water ski? You put him in the water and you pull him, and then you learn how to ski. That's how you learn how to ski. Right. Just like riding a bike. You get on it and you push and you go.
But he pulled by the penis,
so
didn't he?
He would take. he asked me, he goes, "You want to learn how to ski?" And I was like, "No.
Like, fuck
I don't want to learn how to ski." So he took Danny Dominic. And he took him. He would take you in the shallow water, put his hands underneath your crotch from front and back. And then he goes, "Now when the boat pulls, I'm going to pull you up." And he would pull. And we knew what he was doing. And I look over to Danny Dominic and he just goes, "Help me." And we all laughed, right? We're all laughing under our breath because we know what's going on.
This is great.
And we already had a nickname for him, Happy Hands Holohan. So we wanted to go skiing. We're poor kids. We wanted to go skiing. So,
but not that badly.
And I figured I could stay away from him, which I did.
Oh, okay.
And then on the way, then later that night, I just told him I had a stomach ache. Uh-huh.
So you used a pedophile to go skiing. How do you feel about
Finally, we win one.
Too soon, Bob. Too soon.
Some good things came of it all.
Yeah.
Because they could be manipulated to take you skiing.
God, that's right.
You know what? Here.
I'm pissed off. My uncle never took me skiing.
Did you get molested?
Oh, yeah. Nine years. I'll never forget the night he dumped me. Came in my room, woke me up at 3 a.m. and said, "I think we need to see other relatives." Started fucking my sister. Anyway.
But what were you wearing?
Nothing. I slept naked waiting for him.
Just like Private Bradley Manning.
It was, all joking aside, I was molested for 9 years, and my sister as well. And at the end of the day, my sister is just a mess, and it just doesn't affect me. My opinion of it is he did a really bad thing. I had a bunch of orgasms I probably shouldn't have had, and that's how I look at it. It's how I always looked at it. I had a couple-week period where I thought I might be gay. When I was 17, kind of confused.
You mean you're not gay?
Ixnay on the egg game. Aunt K. So it didn't really dig into me like it does so many other people. But I'm sorry you didn't get to come. It's really fun.
But don't you think about I was coming, buddy. don't you think? Can I just get back to religion for a minute? Like, you know, if you look, you know, the thing that people can't explain is what consciousness is, right? Because, you know, when you say that this hippie idea that we're all connected somehow, well, we literally are all connected somehow. Like we're
in
not,
what way?
Separation is an illusion. The fact that we all are just, we come from the same energy. We literally come out of the earth, not figuratively, literally.
Well, we come out of the heart of suns. But yes.
Well,
you know what the really cool thing is? Part of our atoms in our body probably came from a different sun than the other half of the atoms.
No, I didn't know that.
It's pretty cool stuff. Yeah. We're all made of stars.
So
we are literally all made of stars.
You guys are a bunch of hippies.
I know, the weird thing is just the hippies actually got it right, and you know what? I'm sure it was just a fucking coincidence.
But there's no magic in it.
But
that's my point.
No, we're all just energy.
Hold on, we got to let Jimmy get back on his point, because you were going somewhere with this.
No, we're all just energy condensed. Bill Hicks taught me this, and we're all just energy condensed to a slow vibration, experiencing ourselves subjectively, right? So that's all anything is atoms arranged in a certain way, and that's all we are. But people can't explain what consciousness is, you know?
Right.
So like when a flower comes up and it, and then the sun comes up and it opens towards it and its petals go out. Isn't that consciousness?
I don't think that's consciousness.
I don't think it's consciousness.
Let's put it this way. What is a snowflake? A snowflake is water molecules that have been brought down to minus freezing. That does not describe what a snowflake is.
Right.
Same way, I mean, you talk about, yes, we are essentially atoms, but the complexity, when you get down to it, you understand DNA and RNA, how does that not awe you?
Well, that's, I'm as in awe of the natural process as any Christian or Jew who believes in God or Muslim.
No, hang on, let me...
I'm deeply in awe of every picture the Hubble telescope has ever fucking taken.
Right.
And I'm in awe that we do come out of the heart of stars and suns that have blown up over billions of years.
Brian Seitzman on my page says some of the atoms in our body used to be Hitler, too.
Probably, yeah.
I was going there, actually. If the father's dead, somebody's going to be made up of him eventually.
And some of them used to be Gandhis as well.
Ah, yes.
Gandhi.
So there's a battle going on within our... within our hearts.
No, but I just want to say something. You
a molecular
know,
battle.
I find a marked difference between what the religious see as a kind of basically very subjective, in my opinion, very centered, like with them as the center of the universe, that everything relates to them, and I suppose it does in a way. Everybody, you know, everything that you see and perceive relates to you centrally. But, I mean, when you talk about... you know, the miracles in the Bible, a burning bush, a voice from the sky, and then you understand what actually happens every day, that you are seeing light that's traveled from across the galaxy. When you go outside and you have you hold your hand up and you can see moonlight, which is light that's bounced off the sun, hit the moon, and come is now sitting in the palm of your hand, and now it's hitting the back of your retina.
Right.
And you ask me to be impressed by a burning bush?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but look.
That's it.
It's funny you guys talking about this makes me want to tell you what religion or what religious observances I do find like legitimate and sort of worthwhile because I like I said, it's hard for me to talk about this. I feel like just I have a general feeling of a great deal of humility in talking about it. So it's hard to... Yeah, go ahead.
2 minutes.
You want to say something?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dang it.
Oh, I'm so
you
sorry.
You did it to him.
I want to know what you were going to say, because what she's talking about the beauty of...
Well, I asked myself, like, so what religious leaders or whatever teachings do I follow? Do I feel comfortable with? I mean, sort of entirely comfortable with.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Give it to me.
There's this one Buddhist...
I knew
meditation,
this is where we were going.
Woman. I can't remember her name, but I can look it up. And
some people say Buddhism isn't really religion. Yeah. Some people say
that. You know what? It's
the
like
minute,
it's
the
like
minute there's a man on a hill living in a palace, and there are poor people down below who won't kill a fucking bug because they think that it's a loved one's past life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking religion. I don't care what you say.
Gardeners are murderers.
Buddhism is beautiful. Yeah. It's like a prison with no walls.
Say that again?
A prison with no walls.
Oh, but, I read some Buddhist books. I got a lot out of them.
Well,
I
think there's a lot to be gotten from all of religion.
It's the most benign religion I can think of. It's
there's
very
a lot to
benign.
Be had. There's a lot to be had. But my argument and my complaint is it true? And you know what? Philosophically, there's beauty in a lot of it. No question about it. I don't think any atheist would argue there isn't. But every atheist will argue it ain't true. There's no God.
Like,
there's no afterlife.
I like the idea that God is not external.
Yeah.
That God is, you know, the idea of God. Like Buddha wouldn't even use the term God. That's why I like Buddha, right?
Well, I think there's God. But I do like the Dalai Lama for saying something along the lines of, well, you know, if science proves something to be true or not true, then he said something along the lines of, well, I'd go with science. You know, I mean, he actually admitted that he might be the very last Dalai Lama. I mean, he's far more logical in his thinking than most other religious leaders. He's not bad.
I've read a lot of the Dalai. I've read a lot of the Dalai Lama's stuff.
I still think he's kind of.
And I think. Go ahead.
He still is on this religious trip.
When you're convincing people to change the way they live their lives based on things that simply aren't true.
Okay, but look, a lot of things you guys rail against are really primitive kind of versions of a spiritual practice and belief that still exist.
Yeah.
But you know, when you talk, when I think about Catholicism, I think, well, this is Middle Ages. Clearly,
that's exactly right.
In the Middle Ages, everyone was dying.
Right.
Everyone was dying.
Yeah. Well, the burning bush was impressive to people,
and a burning bush was impressive.
And why? And they didn't even understand science.
Because they
then.
Didn't understand science. And
religion
know,
has to upgrade their fucking miracles. That's what needs to happen
well,
if it's going to stay alive.
Yeah. But,
yeah, then
but
you
guys, listen, you guys talk about we're made of suns
yeah.
like it's a miracle.
Right.
I mean, because you do feel awe
yeah.
and amazement
right.
in the face of it.
Right.
And it tells you, it makes you feel humility and a feeling of like, just
oneness.
You can't almost yeah and oneness and all the things that those childish miracles made people during the Black Plague
right.
feel that there was something bigger, that maybe they were connected, there was a place they could go called heaven where they didn't suffer and die horribly
right
and you know so you know I
but if it makes I, you feel better if it just makes you feel better if that's what you're doing that's relatively harmless.
Yeah.
But when you want to ban the use of condoms in Africa, and when you want to pass laws
right.
That debilitate science's ability to use right. stem cell research, that's fucked up on every level.
Well, you're still banning books.
We are fighting that. That's what we're doing.
And I would fight it, too.
All right. Well, listen, I want to thank everybody for being here. Bob Odenkirk, Jimmy
Thanks.
Dore, and Laura. You guys, thank you so much for coming
sure,
in.
Man.
I
had
really
a great
appreciate
time.
You
Good night.
Giving
it was lovely.
Time the show. I also want to thank my guest, my co-host, Heather Henderson, and New Dissident Radio. That's it for Episode 9. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Today's music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson.
Tune in next week when our guests will be Ryan Stout, John Ross, and John Wing. We will be talking about knowing there's no God, but hoping there is. You can find links to our guest's website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, and our email addresses at ardentatheist.com. You've been listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.
Hi, I'm Eddie Pepitone, and you're listening to Ardent Atheist, which is a contradiction in terms, because as soon as you're ardent about something, you believe. So these people are full of shit. But listen anyway.